Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special episode podcast of Tried and True with our WTC AMA. My name is Erica, and with me tonight is the famous community organizer, Zosha.
Hey, guys.
Thank you so much for being here tonight. So before we get started, just a couple formalities. We want a special thank you to More Than Dice for giving us another platform to share all the exciting War Machine and community news. There's plenty of other great podcasts out there and several new ones over the past couple months that have been popping up and I've been seeing online, even some other new ones. So go ahead and check out the show notes below for some more information. A special thank you and shout out to all of our patrons on Patreon. Your continued support has really helped us be able to grow our projects here and increase the quality of our content. Thank you. Thank you so much. We honestly could not do that without your support. We are just going to go ahead and dive right in to our podcast today. But before we get started, on behalf of our communities here in the U.S., we wanted to offer our condolences to our Swedish War Machine family for the passing of Parr. Our hearts are broken with you guys, and just wanted to offer our condolences. Going right into it, we're going to go ahead and introduce some WTC members from Team USA. And the point of tonight's interview, or Ask Me Anything, really, is to promote more information about the WTC, the competition, and the weekend itself. So I want to thank everybody and Zosha for co-hosting with me this evening. Why don't we go ahead and meet our players that we are talking with tonight? So first up on the docket is Chris from Buffalo. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Let us know like where you play out of Buffalo, right? Spoilers. How long you've been playing and how many times you've been to the WTC?
My name is Chris Glowacki. I'm out of Buffalo, New York. I've been playing War Machine pretty much since like 2012, so right in Mark II. It was just me and a couple friends. We started playing in each other's basements. Then we eventually kind of graduated to the local store. And then I kind of more took a more competitive approach to it. So I started playing in tournaments and eventually started, doing more things. And last year was my first year at the WTC. So this year will be my second year. I'm on Team 3, and I've been playing Dark Operations this year in preparation.
Very nice. Well, good luck to you, sir. Next, we have Justin.
Hi, everybody. My name is Justin. I've been playing the game for, I think, 10 years now. I've played Menoth, Mercs, a fair bit of other factions here and there, and I'm currently on Dusk. This year will be my fourth year at the WTC.
Very nice. Well, thank you so much for being here tonight. Next, we have Jake.
Hello, everybody. My name is Jake Van Meter. I've been playing War Machine since 2006. I've been to WTC every year except for 2017 and then the COVID years. I've been playing the game for 18 plus years. I was solo factioning Legion for the longest time, but since the MK4 edition came out, I've kind of branched off to other factions in order to help my creativity in list construction due to the Prime format being such a more limiting construct around just armies rather than whole factions. Very excited to be part of this discussion today, and a lot in store this year. WTC is always a great event, and if anybody has the opportunity to go, it'd be great to go.
Oh, well, thank you for that. And last on our panel this evening is Chris out of Virginia.
Thank you for having me. So Chris Gunther out of Virginia. I've been playing War Machine, I think, since 2012 or 2013 when my friend and I got into it. I played Circle the entire time up until the past year. Now I am an Orgoth boy. I've been to WTC twice and unfortunately skipping this year to get married. But plan to go into the future.
Congratulations again on your engagement.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, again, thank you. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here tonight. We're just going to dive right into this thing. So our questions were fielded online through some multiple social media sites. So I know, like, we promoted on our Discord. Zosha, I think you posted on a couple Facebook groups. And we really wanted to get feedback from our players of, I know, like, I'm a player and I've recently started traveling and competing at conventions. So I know I'm super excited to pick your guys' brain too about playing at such a high level. And we wanted to field those questions from our community. So thank you to everybody who submitted questions on the Google form. Some of the questions didn't make the final cut. I'm sorry. They were very entertaining and very funny. So thank you for that. All righty. So Zosha, I think you have this first question.
All right. So our first question up on the AMA is, when starting list building, what are the key aspects or list building processes you consider? And I'm going to ask Justin and Jake to answer this one.
Okay. Jake, do you mind if I go first? Okay. So I think I'm going to try and split this question up in two here, since Jake and I are answering. I'm going to take this question in the form of, if you're starting out in the game or you're starting out being competitive in the game, what you should look for in list building. And then maybe Jake, you can follow up with, talking about it when you're a little bit more experienced in the tournament scene and kind of the variations that you can jump in from there. And so I guess to start off, I think competitively, the game in its current state has a lot of casters that are very, very strong in any kind of faction that you can think about. Now, obviously, there's going to be factions that are going to be a little bit more tournament viable in that they make up kind of the upper echelon of kind of the tools that you can bring to solve certain questions. That being said, though, I think starting off as a person looking to get competitive, I think reps is the most important thing that you have. So it's about finding something that you're comfortable with and playing with a caster that you're comfortable with. I think that first part of that design that you're looking for in the list design is figuring out what kind of player you are. Do you enjoy teasing out commitments from your opponent, playing a lot more defensively, or do you like pressing certain advantages that a list can create? Going from each side of those types of playstyles, you can start developing lists and taking a look at factions, maybe a new faction that you're trying to pick up, and seeing whether or not those models can kind of situate yourself to have fun with your playstyle. Because at the end of the day, a lot of the tournament experience is, even for the players on this podcast, it's your tournament losses that are going to really, teach you a lot more about that game. So if you're not going to have fun playing what you're trying to learn with, I think you're going to find the other aspects of building out a list and trying to figure out, what tools you have within a faction to really tease out, certain proficiencies and matchups.
Awesome, thank you.
That was a very in-depth question and answer. Good job, Justin. I'm going to try to follow that up. So everybody constructs their lists based on different criteria. Myself, the game has a wide range of models across all the factions. Some people deem as unplayable trash and or dark horsey, but at the end of the day, there's a reason why all these models exist, and they can be included in your list. Just you have to figure out why and how you want to utilize whatever models you want to use in your list. I personally, when I build my list, I play one, it's a game, it's supposed to be fun, so I'm going to play whatever I want to play, whatever is going to make me excited to play the game. If it's a subpar model that's not that great, guess what? It might have a place in my list. I could get it to work. And if that's the case and nobody else has taken it and it has a niche to fill in the list, it's going to go over pretty well. So I don't think any model should be specifically excluded based on it's like people saying that it's not a great model or it's kind of subpar for its cost. Everything in the game, like I was talking to other people this week, different build outs of your war jacks, of your war beasts, they all have a purpose, and you have to find the specific purpose in order to get it into your list. And when you find that purpose that nobody else is expecting, you can catch a lot of people by surprise. So I think there's lots of variables to the game, and I think everybody should explore their options. I play the game mainly for fun in the community. I love it. I like the competitive aspect of the game. That's what also keeps me going at the tournament scene. And so the main thing I built for is, first off, fun. Second off, moving into 2024, where the scenarios and the game has changed quite significantly over Mark III, a lot of my list building now is focused mainly on scenario. Scenario is a lot more live in this edition, and you have to have a lot of covers in order to make sure that you don't lose. So I've been focusing a lot more on that aspect. But basically, it comes down to play what you want to play, have fun, enjoy the community, make friends. That's what it's about.
Thank you so much for that. So question two on the Google Doc is, what are the fundamental differences between the individual international metas, especially Australia, and the North American meta? Do you think these differences account for the U.S. results over the past few years? And I'm going to kick this question to Jake and Chris.
I get to go right into it. All the different communities, all the different countries, Europe, U.S., Australia, they all have their own different metas. When I went to the first WTC back in 2013, you can see that there was a pretty wide open array of different lists and individuals putting specific models in their list because there were different metas. You had different tournament players that are championing specific lists. They had different builds of that list, and it might be different from the USA to Europe to Australia, right? So there was a huge array. And I think now there's two things that are changing kind of that aspect of it now, is that now that it's more of a limited format with the Prime being the main format now, you have very limited army construction, very little variables in your list compared to how you used to. Before, you had 18 plus casters, you had, you know, like hundreds of units and solos and stuff you can choose from, and now we're just narrowed down to a very small scope of those models. So I don't think that we are going to see as much of a variation as we used to in MK4 Prime anyway, but 100% there is a fundamental difference between how each of these metas look at list building and how they value the models in them. Coming into MK4, now that it's out for a year now, all the cadres are being released, I can't go too much into depth as to why X model is being chosen by the Europeans or why X model is being chosen by the Americans, only because I still don't feel that there's enough time and all the models haven't been released just yet. But yes, there is a wide variation previously of how the different metas interacted within their own individual areas.
Thank you for that. So I'm going to take the second part of the question here. Do you think these differences account for the U.S. result over the past few years? Well, I've not been to every WTC or followed them as far back as they've gone, and I'm not European. The one thing I will say that I quickly learned was that Europe is easier for them to cross borders and cross-pollinate with metas, if you will, and be able to experience different play styles and their different list buildings. Whereas in the US, the main time we get over to Europe is for Worlds. So we have to make sure when we go over there, we have the right read on the meta. We hope that we do, but sometimes that's just not the case. So I think same with them coming over here sometimes, just not as exposed. There's a whole ocean between us.
The U.S. does have its own pocket metas, though, right? So you have, the East Coast, you have the Central, you have, Midwest, you have the West Coast. So it's kind of the same. The U.S. obviously is a very big country. So we all have our own pocket metas, too, in this country.
Yes, we definitely do. A few years ago, there was definitely really good teams on the West Coast versus the East Coast versus the Central. And it was great to see it, the American Team Championships, for all of them to go head-to-head and finally fight over one title. So in the U.S., there are small pockets or even just really small communities out of, Texas, we'll say, or Florida, that have their own small ecosystem that just don't leave the state as much as we do.
So question number three, there's a lot of pressure when it comes to playing at big tournament events, especially the WTC. So how do you deal with nervousness or pressure? I'm going to kick this one to the Chris's.
So I'm going to go first. So last year was my first WTC. So there was a lot of nervousness. It was mostly about opponents not kind of being very try hard, I guess. And I was afraid of people being on the other side being very strict and doing banana charges or weird stuff and how I was going to approach it. It was very not the case. And maybe that was just a unique thing, but in general, I'd say at a big tournament, if you don't have an opponent like that, it is just a game and, shouldn't put, you know, that much worry on it. Ideally you would have some kind of plan beforehand, how you're going to approach, the list your opponent has in WTC. We will know what all the teams will have and should have a plan of attack for each team and possibly each list. So it shouldn't be that big of a surprise. And so there should be a plan for all that, which I think keeps the level of nervousness and how you feel about it. It keeps it down. Otherwise, I mean, if you're on tilt or anything during a game, if you need to step away, whatever, adjust your measuring stick, something to keep your mind off it for a little bit, but not completely out of it. Those are things that I do to keep myself leveled. I don't know if Chris has another, aspect on it.
Yeah. So one of the things I'd like to talk about when it comes to nervousness or pressure, especially at WTC, is I think a lot of it comes from either pressure you put on yourself or pressure you feel your team puts on you. So the one thing I quickly did my first year is when you're traveling this far for WTC, there's obviously not money on the line in winning, but there is money that people are spending on flights, on hotels, on just getting there. So one, making it a vacation with people, not just that you're going all the way overseas or to a big convention just for this, turning it into a vacation with friends as well. That camaraderie also goes a long way in realizing that no one's putting pressure on you when it comes to your fellow team. Everyone's there to just have fun. It is just a game. And then in the end, we don't win money for this, right? I think when it comes to the nerves, just understanding that you're going to win and lose games. People have gone to WTC and had a great plan, and they've gone 0-5 and 0-6. People have gone and gone 1-5 and et cetera. So in the end, it's a team event. It's a team sport. If you lose, hopefully somebody else on your team picks up that win. In the end, it's how your team did, not how you did personally. And I've never seen across any tournament I've ever been in a team criticize their player for forgetting rules, messing up, losing a game, so on. So in the end, it's a lot of pressure people put on themselves, and you really don't need to. It's just a game. We're all here just to have fun.
All right. Thank you so much for that. So our question 4 is, how can players who are not competing learn from you and others about the meta within the tournament? So how can they get some of that, good knowledge? And I'm going to send this question over to Justin and Chris.
Okay. Hey, Chris, do you mind if I start off, I guess? Okay. I guess I'll say two things. The first one, I'll give a shout out to Tried and True. Head over to their Discord. There's a lot of content that they put out and a lot of awesome conversations that they're having on the game at their Discord. It's a great way to get in touch with, at the very bare minimum, the Northeast meta and the Mid-Atlantic meta here. But also, everybody's in that Discord as well. My other suggestion would be to actually get a Longshanks account. You can access Longshanks at longshanks.org. You can go onto the leaderboards there and find out what all of these European metas are playing, and as well as our own, just by looking up players, leaderboards, statistics. It's probably one of my go-to resources when I'm trying to look at, you know, list ideas that maybe I'm jumbling around in my head, but also want to, you know, sanity check with maybe some of, you know, players that are more experienced in a faction, if it's a new faction.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that little shout out. Appreciate it. Our Discord's open for anybody. It's open to join. There's a lot of fun stuff going on there. All right. How about you, Chris? What you got?
So piggybacking off of kind of the Longshanks thing, and kind of the results of tournaments. I mean, certain tournaments, it's good to maybe look at someone's list if you need ideas, if you are first starting an army, whatever, not to meta game the, or not to net list or things like that. But, you know, some people who do well, they do well for a reason. It could be their play style. It could be what specifically the meta is where they are. So take things with a grain of salt. WTC is going to be the same way. A lot of the lists were chosen based on what the teams can do with team comp, and maybe all the lists don't answer all the questions for every faction or against every faction, but they may serve different roles. So I wouldn't put too much into specifically what the lists are at WTC, the actual composition, but maybe, hey, there are these really strong casters or lists, and you can see that because every team has one of those factions on it or that pairing. That's what you can kind of get out of it. Those are probably going to be the powerhouse casters, and that's what you can get out of it from the WTC.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So our next question is, if I wanted to play in the WTC, how would I apply for a team? So Chris, Gunther, I'm going to ask you to answer this from a player perspective, and then myself, as somebody who sits on the USA WTC committee, I will answer it more from like the back end administrative end of it.
Yeah. So how do you get on a team? So one, getting your name out there, traveling, getting out of your small meta. You don't have to go and win a big convention, although that does help. But just getting your name out there, whether that's the War Table community, whether that's going to conventions, whether that's lots of steamrollers that you can find. But it's when your name appears in Longshanks or your name is said somewhere or even on a podcast that people start to know who you are. And if you're brought up in conversation, it's obviously in a good way. The other add to that is being a good and clean player. You can win all day long, but at the end of the day, your playstyle does need to be clean. People need to like you, people need to respect you, and you do need to be dependable. These are all things that are required to be on a team. But I would say getting your name out there, being dependable, being respectful to other players, and just being a well-liked person in the community. That way, when captains are picking people that they want to go across the world with, your name is first in their mind, and other people want to bring you along. Be the person you want to be with to sit on a plane for 5 hours with.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Chris. And then I'm just going to talk a little bit about it from the back end in regards to the WTC committee and the paperwork side of it, which is slightly less fun, but also very important. So if you're interested in applying for one of the US teams, you will be required to submit a player resume, and you would indicate on that resume whether or not you want to be a captain or a player. The selection process is subject to change year by year, so follow us on Facebook or check out the website for up-to-date info. We will drop those links in the show notes for you to be able to reference. And other than that, it's really just what Chris said. Your reputation as a player, not just competitively, but in regards to your sportsmanship as well, is really important.
Well, thank you so much for that. That was super informative, and I'm sure our listeners will get a lot of good information from that as well. Okay, so speaking of, hey, like I'm a player and I might be interested in throwing my name in the hat, what would you guys say is the one thing that you wish you knew in advance before your first WTC? And I'm going to send this to Justin and Chris.
Something I wish I knew first before going to WTC. I guess most of what I did learn in the process, I learned before I actually went because I knew people who went the previous year. So they answered a lot of questions. But I guess it would be kind of your conduct at the event, what you can and cannot ask the judges. That's a big thing. And to always ask the judges if there's an issue. It cleans things right up. And also, if you are playing against a good opponent, typically you and your opponent, it's good to be on the same page. I've played last year, and I was losing the game very badly. But me and my opponent, we knew what I was trying to accomplish, and we both tried to make it happen. So that's, I guess, a good thing to keep in mind at the WTC. Try to be that kind of person where even if you're not in the best spot, you're helping your opponent do what they're trying to do. Not obviously, you know, letting them win, but work with them to their end if it's all legal and good.
I was gonna, yeah, so I was gonna add on to that a little bit, just to also, you know, I was relatively surprised when I went. I've had a pretty, I guess, I wouldn't even call it lucky, but most of my opponents spoke English very, very well. But there is going to be a language barrier when you're going overseas. So just prepare for that. That's going to affect your clock. And this is also just kind of an add-on, you know. Some things may not be perfectly communicated like a convention or a steamroller locally here just because of a language difference. So raise your hand, call the judge. That's what they're there for. But something that also Chris added on is that, yeah, this event, we're here to have fun, too. And when you do start getting your logistics set in place and getting the trip planned, I think my biggest regret in my first WTC was the amount of time that I spent in Poland. I did not have enough time. I felt like budgeting for both the jet lag and before the tournament, as well as getting to see all the sites that I wanted to see and hang out with all of my friends, both, you know, after the convention and after the event, was a really, really sorely missed opportunity. And it did drive me to really, really want to go back. But at the same time, that would be probably my biggest regret. And so, yeah, plan a vacation for it, like if you can, obviously. That would be my biggest sell point or biggest piece of advice.
No, thank you so much for that. That's really good insight. Our last question today kind of actually goes back a little bit into the Steamroller talk. How do you think Steamroller 2024 and the January update will affect WTC this year? And we are going to kick this one to Jake and Chris.
So with the new scenario for this year, it has been a much needed change from our old win more than five scenario points and the old zones that we used to have. That being said, list construction and how you approach these scenarios has to be done correctly because it is very easy for you to lose the optimal amount of table space and quickly lose on scenario if your list is not built correctly around securing, controlling, and pushing the scenario. So I think scenario now, as of 2024, this year, is dramatically different than past years. My list construction, I can no longer take like an Abbey 2 beast list and just drop all my beasts and just go straight into their throats because now I need to have other models. Warrior models control multiple zones. I need more contesting models. It's very important to have those contesting models. So this year, with this new scenario compared to last year, the new scenario packet, I do believe you're going to have a dramatic difference. You're already seeing the dramatic difference. You're seeing more infantry being taken. You're seeing less large battle groups because you need higher model counts to spread the board to cover more. So you're definitely going to see it this year. You're going to see a lot of high model count lists.
Awesome. Thank you. How about your thoughts on that, Chris?
I agree a lot with what Jake said. The new Steamroller shook up a lot of things. I don't think you're going to see a lot of samey lists. It's kind of, I think, similar to how if you do know how Mark III was at the beginning, before, I think it was before the Steamroller changes, kind of similar. Basically, the Steamroller designated that you need more units, you need more solos, all that. And specifically in this Steamroller, you need to be very wide on scenario a lot of the time. You can play some games where it's a more dead scenario. You can be more dirtled up in the center. It's also, I think, personally, maybe it's just my meta, I'd say models that are maybe units, multi-wound units, are bigger in this scenario, I think, and higher armor. But that's just, it could just be my local meta. A lot of Orgoth stuff kind of comes to mind. Some of the Chimera stuff, and Dusk especially. So I think there is still the control aspect, even though it's not a blowout, score 5 points and you're done. But if you do get ahead on scenario and you don't have a way to come back, then you're kind of still out of the game. And that really favors attrition, I think, in this Steamroller.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, so much for answering our community questions. Big shout out and thank you to our community for submitting the questions. Again, we wouldn't be here and have done this without you. So thank you so much for your input. And thank you, panel, so much for your time this evening. All right. So as we wrap this thing up, so who ended up joining us a little bit mid-interview is Sean out of the West Coast, and he is team captain for WTC Team USA 1, I want to say. Sean, if you can just go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're doing to prep, and then let us know if there's any cool events happening out your way.
Yeah, Sean Hopkins. I've played War Machine, Hordes, etc. since about 2006. If you look in some of the very old No Quarters, you'll see some images of me in there playing in an army that doesn't make sense. It was like dwarves and Kador or some nonsense, because that's what was painted. I live north of Seattle, closer to Vancouver than to Seattle, and you may hear a little bit of road noise. I'm on my way back north now. So I've been to WTC 3 times. I squeaked in as pretty much the last guy invited 3 years ago or 2 years ago, and then was a team captain last year. What I often play in the Vancouver meta because it's actually closer than Seattle, but I go back and forth between there. Also Portland, which is, you know, an entire West Coast state away. And then I'm playing Orgoth right now. I picked that up at the start of the year after the changes to Signar, and also I was pretty damn tired of playing them after a year. So what we've got coming up out here, we actually have a Steamroller down in Portland in June. Well, it's an IG qualifier, and we have a local what we call the Cascadia Championship Series that has done a pretty good job of whipping up a little bit of fervor about a local championship. That'll wrap up in November at the old Mox Boarding House in Bellevue, Washington. But the on top of that, Dragon's Fury, sorry, Fury, I always say it wrong. there's a 5-man team tournament for that. So if anyone's looking for any WTC like experiences outside of Vokur Brawl, which I will be at the end of the month, come out to Portland.
I guess local events for me or things upcoming, I think we're all going to give Seth and Steve props for Boker Brawl. We're all going to talk about it. But yes, Boker Brawl is at the end of the month. I'm going to be going to that, and a bunch of locals are going to be going. I think we have at least two teams from Buffalo that are coming up. And then locally, I'm going to be running a Steamroller May 18th at our local store. It's just going to be a 16-person Steamroller, if we can get 16. It's going to be at Kingpin Gaming and Comics, or Comics and Gaming. And that'll probably be the local guys and some of the Syracuse guys that'll show up for that. So I'm excited for that. And that's all I have at the moment until WTC. There might be some stuff in between, but that's what I plan on going to.
Awesome. Yeah, so I have a couple of events that I'm going to, including WTC for the rest of the year, Boker Brawl. I am local to Washington, D.C., so my con every year is Nova Open. And there's no better person to make a shout out for Nova Open than Erica here, who's running it. So I'm going to ship it over to you, but I also want to make another shout out to Delaware War Machine Discord. You can find all the events there, and they have on their events section. So there's a lot of local events here as well to the Mid-Atlantic area that you can just go out and have fun.
Oh, thank you so much for the little shout out there, Justin. Yep. So Delaware War Machine, we are running all the War Machine events at Nova Open. Tickets went on sale March 1st. June 1st is like kind of our do or die date for tables. So if you're on the fence or you're not sure if you're going to go or you want to go, we encourage players to pick up tickets before June 1st because that's when they do table reallocation. So either like lose space or gain space. We have a larger team this year of volunteers. So thank you, community members who's coming out to help. We have all kinds of events. We have Unlimited. We have Prime. We have events from 50 points all the way up to 100 points. Should be a lot of fun. And I can't wait for this year. It's going to be a bigger and better than last.
So for mentions for me, I live in Boston, East Coast. So Captain Con is my first con of the year every year in February. It used to be TempleCon prior to many years back. Great convention, would suggest to anybody to come out and have a good time that weekend. Other than that, you do have Adepticon. Nobody's talked about Adepticon yet. It is in Illinois. It is the host for the ATC event once it moved to a convention from where it was before. ATC is the America Team Championship. This year, we ended up having 7 or 8 teams over there. It was a big improvement from the previous year. Then we have the infamous Boker Brawl, which year over year keeps on growing. The team event this year has gone above expectation. Seth and the team over there do an amazing job at pulling that together, so you're going to hear it from everybody else. This year, our very own Zosia Van Meter is hosting a 32-person IG qualifier at Iron Weld in June. That is in Wakefield, Massachusetts. So hopefully we get to see some people out there. It'll be a great time. And then, of course, we also have Nova Open. Nova Open's a great convention at Washington. And I've been going pretty consistently for the past, around 6 years. So they put on a great show. Erica and her team put on a great show last year as well. So I would tell everybody to look up these conventions, try to make it out to it. You'll have a great time.
Oh, thank you for that, Jake. And Chris, you're a caboose tonight.
Nice. So a lot of the ones everyone's already said, Captain Con, I'll say Boker Brawl is in New Jersey. I don't know if anyone actually said where it's at. It's in Central Jersey. Amazing event. Seth and Steve go out of their way year over year. And it's just such a great event. If you like beer, the beer there is extra cheap since it's in a VFW. But great event. The other one I'd like to point out is in St. Louis, I believe next weekend, Nate M. is hosting a Steamroller. I believe it has a 32-player cap. 100 points. That would be on the 20th, I believe, of this month. And then Siege Invitational, I believe, is being held in Memphis or Nashville. I can't remember which of the two. But great event to go to. You have a chance to win a literal Warhammer. that they give out and goes into a lottery, along with Little Warhammers, but a great event done by Minority Report and very affordable event to get to as well.
Oh, thank you so much for that. So speaking of all these great conventions and IG qualifiers, so the Community Finder website, we're actually getting ready to make a new announcement with that. We have a new addition to that map. So for those that don't know, Paul and Dan have really been spearheading this on our team. We've created like a one-stop shop repository of information for War Machine communities. It was originally just going to be the United States. Now it's the entire world. It's pretty cool. When Andy and I were at Adepticon, we were approached, we're like, hey, is there any way you guys could add conventions and big War Machine events to that? So we've actually started doing that. So if you go to the Community Finder website now, we'll have it posted in the show notes. You'll actually see on the map right now, we have United States and Europe. A couple countries in Europe right now where you can check out to see where War Machine is being held at larger conventions and roughly the time of year that they are. With that, speaking of Delaware War Machine, our next steamroller at Cherry Hill Top Deck Games is going to be in late June. We're going to be posting information about that on our Discord. We're actually going to have a charity raffle for breast cancer. We have a couple of army boxes and expansion boxes that we're going to raffle off, and that will go towards charity. And after Nova, we have the Susquehanna Scuffle, our third ever. That is a two-day event this year, this time around. And those that'll be a three-man team event. We've upped the cap to, I think it's 54. It's going to be 2 days in Philadelphia. It's over a federal holiday weekend, so you get that Monday off. But yeah, that's all I got to plug. And Nova, of course. Again, I want to thank everybody for coming on. Zosha, thank you so much for the idea and putting this together, getting us together. This was so much fun. Always love talking to you guys. You're great. So for Tried and True Delaware War Machine, we do have some great content on the way, including some new battle reports with some brand new armies we haven't had on the channel yet. I'm pretty excited. And of course, we will be at Bocor Brawl. Come bump into any of us, Rick, Gatorman, Pete, Paul, Dan, myself, Andy, and score yourself a Delaware War Machine custom 40 mil chip. We'll be there to see you at the tables. Thanks again, guys.